Morning, Your Honors. Honored to be here before you. It's a matter of housekeeping. The first 12 minutes will be divided 6 and 6 between myself and my wife, Alicia Campbell. We've worked on this case in conjunction for a couple of years. Previous incarnation in a different case was before this court in Trong, as you may know. The reason we're pursuing a pro bono case like this is because it was a personal story. Client came in and said, I'm being kicked out of my home, and I never received notice of a foreclosure. I didn't know it happened. And I have proof that I was paying. I have proof that it shouldn't have happened. We thought, well, before they remove you from your home, the plaintiff has to prove title. I mean, the new buyer after the foreclosure says, I have a right to possession because I own it, and you should get out. So, you know, if they didn't take title, we should be able to prove that. And we learned quickly that in Missouri, since 1997, the unlawful detainer statute has applied to homeowners in foreclosure. And the result is before you. It's unusual that I can say my clients are here. Mr. and Mrs. Smith are sitting here with their son. And what happened was their son came home, found a notice on the door that there was a foreclosure, that the sale had already occurred. Their testimony would be that they did not receive notice of that foreclosure at all. Then the same entity that foreclosed, Wells Fargo, seeks to kick them out of their home. There's a summary judgment filed. The first element of the summary judgment is we have the right to possession as Wells Fargo because we took title from the trustee's deed. Well, every case I've ever handled, I'm not usually defending people, but got to be a defendant. And in this case, I thought, well, I know how to respond to a summary judgment. I know what the defendant does when I file them. If I ever file a summary judgment, they say, I'm going to meet that fact. I'm going to disprove it with facts. What did we do? We responded. We said, there was no default. The default that occurred was when they refused to accept payments. There was an ongoing request for modification.
Counsel, that doesn't change the fact that they bought this at the foreclosure sale. That may impact whether the foreclosure was properly held, whether it should have been held at all, but it doesn't change the fact that it was held and they were record owners, correct? Well,
it doesn't change the fact that they believe they bought it, Your Honor, but I would suggest this is just like a contract case. If you took a contract from someone, I originally owed someone money and they assigned the contract to you. You come to me and say, pay, I've got the contract. I certainly have the right to say, I've never seen that contract before, or prove that you got the contract, or prove that you legally obtained the contract. In this setting, the problem is if the foreclosure is void, we all agree, and the law is very clear, that if the foreclosure is void, title didn't pass. And so all we're asking is that if a plaintiff walks in and says, I have a right to kick you out of your home, and you say, why? And they say, well, because we own it. If you say, I don't believe you own it at law, then the plaintiff should have to prove it, and it's a very simple matter.
Well,
if the plaintiff
counsel,
proves default, we're done.
Counsel, you're making kind of two sets of arguments, as I see in here. One is you're saying it should be a defense to the unlawful detainer, and I think Judge Wilson's question was, but you're raising really defenses to the foreclosure, and I see your alternative argument is, well, I should be able to raise those defenses to the foreclosure then as a counterclaim in the unlawful detainer action if I can't raise them as a defense.
Well, I would actually refine that a little, Your Honor. I would just suggest that this is, I don't think we're seeking something unusual. The plaintiff's first element is to say they own it. That's the only, I mean,
well,
they
but
say,
doesn't the law say that if you have the trustee's deed, that's proof of ownership?
It doesn't, Your Honor. The law says simply title shall not be inquired into. The law doesn't set up some presumption.
So I could walk in and bring an unlawful detainer, we're having nothing?
Absolutely. In fact, here's the respondent's brief. Respondent's brief, page 40, says, title is not a requirement for pursuing this cause of action. They say that courts have recognized that a complaint in unlawful detainer is quite sufficient if it alleges the right to possession. According to the respondent, if you walk in and say, I have the right to possess it in a petition, then the game's over. If the title is written in crayon, they win. If there's no title, they win. And the problem is that can happen.
That's not the law. That's never been the law. The law has always been in this state that you can inquire into title insofar as it's relevant to the right of possession. Would you argue with that?
Your Honor, I would say that I've never heard that position expressed by the respondent or in any case I've ever handled, and I wish that were the law, because what we did is they said we have title and therefore we have right to possession, which I think, as you've identified, are largely they're synonymous. I mean, their claim to right to possession is that they own it. And they say, you're a trespasser in our property. And what we said, Your Honor, is if you didn't take title, if there was a fundamental flaw in how you took title, which in this case happens to relate to a foreclosure, could happen a number of ways, But in this case was, if you didn't take title because the previous proceeding was void, then you don't have a right to remove this. And so what's happened in this case is the clients are removed from the home without the right to contest title. They contested it in the summary judgment, and Judge Dickhainer said, I'm not allowed to look at this. In fact, if you look at the transcript from Judge Dickhainer, he said, I'm troubled by this because if Mickey Mouse came in with the title, I'm not allowed to inquire into title.
Well, how is this different from the Truong case? How is this different from Truong?
Well, Your Honor, I don't think it's different in the sense that, you know, Truong was dismissed on a trial on the lack of a trial de novo. Mm-hmm. I think it's very similar. It highlights the same problem, which is if we have a situation in which title is transferred defectively and a party seeks to remove someone from their home, the problem here is that we kick them out, hit them with double damages, all while saying they're not allowed to contest title, and then tell them to go file a separate action to later contest title. But the damage is already done. The Smiths are pursuing a claim to say, this was a wrongful foreclosure, it's still our house. If they win that, there will be a declaration by a court that this is their home and that they should have never been removed. The problem is they have been removed and they've been awarded a fine, double damages, without any evidentiary finding at all. I see my time is up. You'll hear more.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but your opponents say that the remedy would have been to file some type of pre-foreclosure proceeding, making some of these same arguments that you're making now. But were you unable to make that because your client didn't get notice of the pre-foreclosure process? They just got notice that the house was already foreclosed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Didn't they say you got one notice but not two? You didn't get the first notice, but you got a second one before the foreclosure? Or am I incorrect?
Yes, there was an original foreclosure in 2007 by which they got notice, and they handled that. The notice that they received was after it was sold, when their son came home from school and saw the notice on the door. So in terms of being able to do anything prior to the foreclosure sale, they didn't have notice to seek any remedy in the court, like a temporary restraining order or something of that.
But you're not asking for relief just in those situations where someone claims they didn't get notice. You're saying you should always be able to contest for the foreclosure in the wrongful detainer action. Why is that proper? Why isn't it your obligation? And if you didn't get notice, then to try to set aside the foreclosure, but why bring it up in this separate action?
Because what we have here is irreparable harm that's going to happen. We have one, and I think Judge Dickhainer really illustrates what he's facing when he looks at these facts. He's very, very upset with the fact that the Smiths came in with information that would at least call into question the title that Wells Fargo was asserting. And so here we have one shot at the apple where we can look at whether or not title actually passed, whether or not Wells Fargo has a right to possess the property. And the reason why that's important here is not only does it keep us from committing irreparable harm to the Smiths and moving them out, but we have a judge, we have a proceeding where we can look at all the information and make that determination.
You asked the circuit court to stay the unlawful detainer action, didn't you?
We did, Your Honor.
And what was the response?
They refused.
And what was the proceeding in which you made that request?
What we were doing, we had many procedures going on with us because we also have this order from the 2007 foreclosure and the non-pro-tunk action. And before we got clarification, because in terms of the title history in this matter, we went from Argent to then Wells Fargo, and it's not very clear how that occurred. And so we were attempting to rectify the record and figure out who actually owns this house. And so we did it in that, and it was denied.
And that was a proceeding in which you were able to raise those questions about who actually owned the house, correct?
Or at least try to get clarification as to how the title history is working.
Is that the same action that's pending now? Were you raising the wrongful foreclosure issues, or is this a new action?
No, the new action is the wrongful foreclosure action.
What happened with the circuit? Did you appeal the circuit court's ruling?
You went through the trial de novo process here, right?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Now, if you're able to demonstrate that it was a wrongful foreclosure, as you claim, why wouldn't you be entitled to continuation of your damages?
Well, I think we would, Your Honor.
I mean, don't your damages continue? Aren't they still continuing today if what you say is true?
It's true, Your Honor.
Then how does it violate due process? I mean, we have all sorts of administrative proceedings where you lose privileges or whatever, and then later you have some hearing that determines the merits of it. I understand your arguments that this is that this remedy is somehow inadequate. But if what you say is true and you win your lawsuit and you are able to collect your damages, how does that violate due process?
Well, we have a large deprivation that's going on here. I mean, it's not been the court's function, at least in my experience, you know, not 30 years, but 5 years of experience, it's always been that we don't value quickness over what's right.
Right. I understand the judicial economy argument, and I guess my question, though, is focusing in on the due process issue in particular, as opposed to the judicial economy argument.
Well,
are they separate, or if you lose on due process, do you lose completely?
No, I don't think we lose completely, because I think the equal protection arguments are just as persuasive, because now we do have litigants in Missouri that are given different
Isn't
rights.
There a special, I remember Randolph versus Pete was a case in the Court of Appeals regarding land. Isn't land or real estate considered something special? It's not necessarily chattel. There's a higher level of right to possession of a fee or a part of a fee than there is, and that's your land, that's where you live, as opposed to suing for damages. You're allowed to live there.
Yes. I mean, property is precious, and here we're talking very much about what is the American dream for people. So to be thrown from it without really knowing whether or not we should, I think is a grave deprivation under any
Why
constitutional
Why isn't it
stay
an adequate remedy? And you would argue it was an abuse of discretion not to grant the stay, maybe if there was a strong showing.
Well, I know from personal experience, the city of St. Louis has a policy of never granting a stay in these matters. So I had a case dealing with fraud that we had litigated for 3 years, and they still refused to grant a stay and kicked my clients.
Well, a stay would still get double rent.
Yes.
You have to file a double bond to preserve your appeal.
Right. I mean,
well,
this is.
Now, counsel, we're talking about two different stays. One's a stay in the circuit court to prevent the unlawful detainer action from proceeding. There's no bond. There's no double bond by statute required for that. Correct.
Correct.
All right.
But you could appeal that. Getting back to Judge Wilson's question, which was earlier, could you appeal the circuit court's decision not to stay it?
I mean, I don't think very feasibly with the way the unlawful detainer statute works, Your Honor. My time's up. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm Tom Walsh for the respondent, Wells Fargo. This is a constitutional challenge to statutes which have been on the books in this state for 150 years. And what's unique about it is that no court in this state, no court in any state in the union that has similar procedures has ever held this procedure, this statutory scheme, to be unconstitutional. On the contrary, there are two decisions that are squarely on point, which require affirmance of the dismissal of this appeal, or the affirmance of
but
this appeal.
There's precedent, but I recall at least talking to Professor Salsik of St. Louis University Law School. In 1969, he and Richard Barron filed an action and said that people are allowed to have notice before you evict them and throw their possessions in the street.
The record shows in this case there was notice, there was publication, there was the compliance with the statute as it was interpreted in that case.
But the law at that time, according to Pete Salsik, was you could do that. And they brought it to the Supreme Court of Missouri. I think Judge Barjay may have written the opinion, said, no, you can't do that. So I'm just saying, we can look at these different
Well, the controlling case from this court is Fannie Mae against Howlett in 1975, which specifically addressed these issues and held that there is no state action for constitutional purposes, either by reason of the non-judicial foreclosure statutes or the implementation of them under...
It wasn't dealing with the right to bring counterclaims or defenses and wrongful detainer actions, though. It was dealing with different... due process issues. It didn't say the courts cannot set up procedures that allow you to raise these counterclaims in those same actions.
It was dealing with the exact same statute. It was an unlawful detainer case.
It did not, though, hold that courts cannot, by rule, provide that you can raise matters by counterclaim or as a defense. It was addressing
What it said was that the implementation of the non-judicial foreclosure action as a matter of private contract by the courts does not implicate state action.
Yes.
And therefore, there are no constitutional issues.
But non-judicial foreclosure was okay, but that's the issue here. They're dealing with whether wrongful detainer and whether it's appropriate that you can't raise defenses in wrongful detainer, or whether this court has authority, if I understand you're saying, to set up rules that would permit you to raise defenses. Those weren't addressed by that case.
No, but
if
the unlawful detainer statute does not constitute state action because it only allows implementation of the party's private agreement, then whatever those provisions are and were aren't state action either. And the prohibition against inquiry into title was in the statute then, as it is now. The interpretation of those statutes from 1855 on was always the same. The court was dealing with exactly the same statute that we're now dealing with, and it held that it analyzed all the Supreme Court cases about what is necessary to implicate the state in private action, namely a symbiotic relationship.
Counsel, do you agree with my understanding of the law that you may inquire into title insofar as it is relevant to the question of possession?
No, I think the courts have actually said that that's an indirect attack on title. The only real question is there a trustee's deed which indicates that the plaintiff is entitled to possession?
And you have a trustee's deed.
We have a trustee's deed.
And I assume at some point you have to show that you're the person named as the buyer.
We do.
In order to do what?
In order to be the plaintiff in an unlawful detainer
action. In order to prove possession. That
Correct.
You have a right to possession.
Correct.
And I assume that you also have to prove that the seller had the right to possession that was transferred to you.
By reason of the deed itself proves that. The trustee's deed.
But you don't have to prove that. The trustee here is not the trustee named in the deed of trust.
That's right? Correct, but there's a recorded document appointing this trustee as a successor trustee. That's in the record at page 139.
I agree, but it isn't that document necessary to prove your right to possession?
No, the trustee is the trustee, and they, by the way, they stipulated that we were the property.
I'm not arguing whether it was rightful. I'm saying that the document changing the trustee from X to Y is necessary for you to prove your right to possession, because otherwise you got a deed from somebody we never heard of.
Well, if it's recorded, it speaks for itself, and yeah, we're entitled to.
You're thinking I'm asking you a harder question than I am. You have to prove that change in trustee in order to prove that you, the buyer, have the immediate right to possession.
We have to establish that the deed came from the trustee.
And that's, while it may have to do with title, it is essential to the proof of the question of possession. Would you agree with that?
I would agree that the trustee's deed has to be regular on its face. It has to describe the proper property, and it has to otherwise indicate that the buyer is the plaintiff. The plaintiff is the buyer. And that's a summary procedure. I mean, that's the purpose of unlawful detainer. It is strictly a possessory interest, and it doesn't prevent these people from filing, and actually there have been five lawsuits now over this particular note and deed of trust. And as far as their complaint about being thrown out of their house unceremoniously and a vindictive bank taking advantage of them, I'd like to point out the record shows that in 2007 there was a foreclosure on this very same property, and these people came in and said there's a mistake here, and the bank said show us the mistake, and they did, and so they unwound.
And their argument here, and it'll have to be proved at this point, it's their argument is that they didn't get the opportunity to do that here because they didn't timely get notice, and they're not being permitted to litigate that issue in this litigation.
Well,
so they don't have the same
opportunity. The record conclusively shows that they got notice. And it also, the notice says if you have a problem.
Well, I think that's a contested issue. I don't think it conclusively shows anything. But, and how could it when you're saying that's not even something that can be litigated in this case?
It could be litigated in a wrongful foreclosure action,
right,
which they're litigating. You know,
So this record couldn't conclusively show it since you're not letting them litigate it.
Well, no, I mean, the statute says that publication is adequate notice, but the record also shows a return of service on the notice by, you know, six or seven different methods. So, but you know, if they have a problem, what happened in 07 shows how you deal with it. Come in and say, you know, we made these payments, they were misapplied somehow, so that foreclosure was unwound. And in this case, even after this particular foreclosure, they received a proposed modification to allow them to stay in the house, and they said, no, we're not interested in that. Now, the other aspect of the constitutional issue, of course, is the United States Supreme Court's decision in Lindsay against Norman in 1972. Again, squarely on point, dealing with the Oregon unlawful detainer statute containing provisions almost exactly the same as ours. And it was raised both the equal protection argument and the due process argument. The same arguments they're making here.
And didn't Lindsay say, though, that the property owners were not prevented from instituting their own litigation, just that it could not be in the form of a counterclaim or a defense claim?
That's correct, Your Honor, and that's the same thing the Missouri courts have said for years, that you're not deprived of any right to go to court. It's just not in this particular case. You have the right to seek an injunction. You have the right for wrongful foreclosure. You have all your rights, but this is a particular summary procedure where we're not going to allow the orderly transfer of property to be disrupted by, let's face it, if you're going to allow counterclaims and defenses, this is going to turn into a free-for-all, and the associate circuit courts are just going to get clogged with a counterclaim, frivolous or otherwise, in almost every
foreclosure. But for judicial economy, if a separate proceeding was brought, I'm making these same claims, and then meanwhile there's this unlawful detainer action going on. For judicial economy, I guess it'd be up to the trial judge to decide if he wanted to hear them together.
Yes, and in this case, although the stay was denied, the judge said, you know, why don't you go to the Court of Appeals and get a writ? That's what you ought to be doing now, because I can't really grant a stay, but you could get a writ from the Court of Appeals, and they said, no, we don't want to do that.
Get a writ for what?
To stay the unlawful detainer pending their claim that the foreclosure
is. Aaron, are you agreeing they could have gotten such a
I don't have a position on that. I don't do that kind
of
stuff.
What are the rules regarding the granting of a stay in that situation?
I think there's a case that says it's not appropriate, but I don't know that the rules specifically cover it. Again, you know, the objective here, as the Lindsay court pointed out, is to prevent the problems that arose at common law before we had unlawful detainers, namely the self-help retaking of possession of property that was being held onto by someone who was unlawfully detaining it. The statutes were put in to prevent the violence that sometimes occurred at common law when that happened, and that was deemed by the Supreme Court of the United States to be a sufficient rational basis for the unlawful detainer statute. So the equal protection claim was almost summarily dismissed. And likewise, as far as due process is concerned, the Supreme Court said you're not being denied your rights to a hearing. It just has to be in a different forum.
Mr. Walsh, in 97, the legislature added foreclosure purchasers to the list of plaintiffs for unlawful detainers.
Correct.
That's not the provision, or at least you don't rely exclusively on that provision in your case. Is that correct?
No, that's right. At common law, before that, the post-foreclosure unlawful detainers were still pursued under that same statute.
Under a landlord-tenant.
Yes, correct. Most deeds of trust have a landlord-tenant provision in them, which was used prior to 97 to implement the unlawful detainer statutes, which is what happened in the Howlett and Scott cases. So,
but you conceivably have an innocent party who buys title, and the title may not be good, but you have a right to the title, and you want the property, and it's important to clear the property so people know what's going on as far as who owns the property. So you can you can deal with the property. As it turned out, Wells Fargo bought the when it was proposed, when you bought the property foreclosure. Well,
it's important to have an orderly transfer.
Orderly
of the property. Yes, and you know the bottom line here is these people didn't pay their loan. I mean, that's why this all started, and there are now five lawsuits because of disagreements about the unlawful detainer statutes. But at the bottom, this is not a constitutional issue at all. Yeah. The Supreme Court, this court, and the U.S. Supreme Court have, on two different occasions, for two different reasons, announced that this A is not state action and B does not violate either equal protection or due process. They've tried to get around that by saying that they have a substantive due process claim, which is frankly quite far out, based on the open courts provision. Well, the open courts provision applies to personal injury claims where the court is completely closed, and as we pointed out several times, the courts are not closed to their claim here, but this isn't a personal injury claim either, and substantive due process requires something that shocks the conscience and is so draconian as to offend even the toughest sensibilities. So,
Mr. Walsh, Ms. Campbell argues or made a statement that the City of St. Louis Circuit Court has a policy that a stay is never granted. Is that in the record, or do you dispute that?
Well, my information is that if you go to the court, the circuit court, before the foreclosure and ask for an injunction, they're granted quite regularly.
And a stay of the unlawful detainer is what the question is, though.
Pardon me?
A stay of the unlawful detainer, which, of course, couldn't occur until after the foreclosure.
Yeah, I don't know what the policy is one way or the other on that. I'm sure that foreclosure counsel would probably resist that as just another effort to buy more time to muddy up the works. And the problem when you do that is that the property falls into disrepair. It takes longer to transfer it. The deficiency increases. And if you're going to make lenders...
Hypothetically, there have to be circumstances. You're arguing there aren't circumstances in this case. But there have to be circumstances under which there was not notice of foreclosure. So a pre-foreclosure stay is unavailable. And that where there was some significant impropriety in getting that trustee's deed. So the question is, I understand you're saying that didn't happen in this case. What relief is available for that circumstance?
Damages. As was pointed out earlier, if we threw them out wrongly, you know, their damages are continuing to mount. They've sued the trustee, they've sued the bank, they've sued the servicer, you know, and they've been denied at every turn because their claim doesn't have any merit, but that doesn't keep them from coming here and asking you to declare the whole system unconstitutional, which...
Just to be clear, is the stay to the unlawful detainer, is that on appeal here? The denial of that stay?
No. No, the only thing that's on...
The opposing counsel indicated they did not appeal that.
Yeah, they did not appeal that. They did not appeal the denial of their effort to reform the 2008 judgment in which they agreed that Wells Fargo was the proper party, was entitled to the first lien, and agreed that this particular trustee was the right trustee. And they did not appeal that. That's res judicata. They also tried to reform that and get the judge to say that really shouldn't have been part of that judgment. And that was denied, and they didn't appeal that. So they're doubly barred from challenging our title, our right to possession, or the trustee's ability to act. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Walsh.
Your Honor, if the court will indulge me, I'd like to answer a couple questions I heard.
Let me ask you one question about
yes, Your Honor.
What mean we give that title shall not be an issue? What mean do we give to that?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's plain. I mean, it says title shall be acquired into no wise. And Judge Wilson, respectfully, I wish it were the law that we're able to, but as you heard even from respondent, their position is giving a trustee's deed is a matter of courtesy, and they're not required to do it at all. And in this case, we challenged the title and the transfer of that title in a number of ways, and Judge Dickhander said, I have to take all that and throw it out. And so what you have is a situation in which, Your Honor, that statute is unconstitutional. To Judge Fisher's question, Judge, you asked, well, can't they just file a case later? And yes, they can. The problem, of course, is that due process, procedural due process in specific, says We must ask what's at risk and how much process is due before we take it. And courts have uniformly rejected the idea that we can take it and fix it later. It relates somewhat to this idea of orderly transfer of property. In this case, the position of the respondent is they might prove, the Smiths might prove they were thrown out of their home illegally. And they might prove they still own it. And they might prove that the double damages were insulting and wrong. That's okay, they can just get some damages later. They were thrown out of their home, they were displaced from their home, their credit was ruined, and they were hit with double damages before there was any evidence to prove that they were wrongfully there. In fact, the evidence before the court was that they had a right to be in that house and that they still own it today. And the court said, I have to throw it out, and I have to enter judgment for the plaintiff. And so I want to be clear. If this court affirms what is happening, it is an entry of summary judgment in every unlawful detainer in the state on the issue of title. Because there is no way to challenge the right of possession if you can't walk in and say, that title's fake, I didn't get notice, the foreclosure's void. The result is, every time you file an unlawful detainer, you win. You get double damages. The longer they fight, the more money the bank gets. And then their only recourse is after that happens, and after they've been thrown out of their home, to hope they can find a lawyer, hope they can file a new case, and hope they can get damages. When they walk in, I've done this, when they walk into that case, the first thing they hear is, wasn't there already a judgment that you weren't supposed to be in that home? A judgment without evidence.
The legislature did provide that it is a summary judgment, but the legislature said, as opposed to rent and possession, the legislature actually says you have a right to a jury trial in this summary proceeding.
Your Honor,
by filing a summary judgment, you're doing a summary judgment or a summary proceeding, and you take away the legislatively granted right to a jury trial.
Your Honor, I agree. There is no way for us to beat a summary judgment. It is impossible. I have to tell clients, dispute even possession. If you have all sorts of evidence, you can't beat the summary judgment.
Dispute possession, their right to possession. That's how you defeat their summary judgment.
Your Honor, I respectfully ask, how do you do that without talking about title? Because we're prohibited from inquiring into title in any way. And in Judge Dickhainer's court, at least in this case, when we presented evidence that, the title's void. And Judge Dickhainer said if it was for Mickey Mouse, he can't look at it. Because as I understand their right to possession, it turns exclusively on title. And the problem I face is I don't know how to dispute possession without talking about title.
If you bring an action to decide title to this real estate today, and I believe you already have, is that issue res judicata because of this judgment?
Interestingly, no. Because
why?
Because we're not allowed to challenge title.
Because
and
this judgment didn't decide title.
It just decided.
Your Honor, I agree with you. And here's my concern. How do we determine that a party has not only the right to possession, but the right to remove another party from the home and charge them double damages for the nerve of living there if we don't determine whose home it is? The only thing that determines who should get this house is who owns it. And so we kick them out of the home, but we don't determine if they have title. And then we say, go litigate and find out whether or not they should have kicked you out of the home. That's exactly what due process is supposed to prevent. We don't do it fast and then get it right later. We get it right first. We don't say to families, sometimes we'll wrongfully throw you out of the house, and sometimes you'll have to move your kids to a new school and ruin your credit and pay double damages. Don't worry about it. We can get it right in the next case.
So the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Lindsay that there's no equal protection violation, no due process violation. Can you address that?
Lindsay's a different case. I mean, first of all, Lindsay has a clear line in it, I have it here, that says due process requires the ability to present every available defense. And so I think at a minimum, Lindsay stands for the idea that whatever is at issue must be allowed to be met. And what happens here is the plaintiff has a burden to prove they have the right to possession. We have no way to meet it. There's no defense to this case. I've tried. There's no defense. In Lindsay, it was a landlord-tenant case, and the issue was Judge Fisher's not paying his rent. Judge Fisher has a right to say, yes, I am. Judge Fisher, I don't mean you're a deadbeat on a public record. Judge Fisher has the right to contest non-payment, Your Honor. What he doesn't have the right to do is to bring in collateral issues. All right? And so, yeah, he couldn't argue about other things. And interestingly, in Oregon, this is going way back, in Oregon, there were independent covenants. The right obligation to pay and the right to keep a house habitable were independent covenants. And they said, we can't tell Oregon what their defenses are. And so in Oregon, if you said, yeah, but my apartment's a junk heap, that didn't mean you didn't have to pay. So Oregon didn't prevent defenses. Here, there's one issue in this case. Do they own the house and have the right to kick somebody else out of it? And it's the one issue we can't litigate. You've heard more about title in the last 10 minutes than was ever before the court that they were allowed to consider. The legislature has taken a Missouri court and made it a rubber stamp for every unlawful detainer ever filed, regardless of evidence. And I see my time has expired.
Judge Fisher had a question.
Yes.
Back to the issue of the right of possession. Do you dispute that the record chain of title demonstrates their right of possession?
Yes.
Okay, and what fact did you dispute at the summary judgment motion to indicate that they don't have the right to possession?
Well, we alleged a number of them. I mean, we alleged, for instance, that the trustee's improper. And you heard that question. I mean, the trustee that's named here, the deed of trust says the lender shall appoint a trustee. And they can appoint a successor trustee. Well, the lender was called Argent, right? Enter Wells Fargo, a stranger to the deal. And they appoint a successor trustee who happens to be their attorney, who happens to be their attorney in every action, who somehow is going to be neutral. So we say there's a lot of problems with the trustee. We don't agree that there was default. Our clients, I mean, this is out of the record. Your Honor, I just want you to know this. We have records that we received last month for modification agreements on a home that's been foreclosed for 2 years. This was a mess. Our clients were trying to pay on their home. Their payments were refused. When they asked for a modification, they were told, send in $10,000 and we'll consider it. Right? So our clients say there was no default. So there was a void foreclosure. There was no notice, which makes the foreclosure void, and the trustee was improper, which makes the foreclosure void, meaning title didn't pass. We put all that in the summary judgment. That should have at least created a question of material fact, and it was thrown out.
Okay, what I'm asking about, I'm not asking about title, I'm asking about possession. Does the motion for summary judgment attach or refer to matters that are a record that would demonstrate a right of possession?
In other words,
that the trustee foreclosed, that a successor trustee was appointed, that person's name is in the deed.
They never file the appointment of successor trustee that I recall, and I don't believe that they do that. They include typically the trustee's deed, and their position is, well, we got a trustee's deed. We certainly disputed the validity of that deed. And so, Your Honor, I think right to possession turns on ownership. I mean, we all agree, I think, that if the Smiths still own the home, then they have a right to possess it.
Do they put in an issue, and mind you, Wells Fargo is just trying to do their job in order to transfer property, just doing their business. But if they put in a summary judgment the question of possession or right to possession, then you have a right to, under summary judgment law, you have a right to respond to it. Even though they don't have to necessarily put it into issue, do they put in an issue when they put in a summary judgment?
Well, yes, Your Honor. I mean, I think they know that they can't say they have a right to possession and cross their fingers. They sense that that must come from something. And so their first line is, we have the right to possession because it was deeded to us in the trustee's deed. We challenge and say, yeah, but if the trustee's deed is void, right, then you don't have the right to possession. But the problem is all that evidence, which creates a dispute, is thrown aside because of 534210, which is the only section we challenge. My time is way expired. I'll be happy to answer questions, but I don't want to take
Thank
the court's
you very
time.
Much.
Thank you.